I'm Reg. This is David. Just a quick poll of the of all of you. So, how many of you know what structured journalism is, or what you think it is? Show of hands. Okay, let's do it the other way around. How many people wandered in by mistake because they thought this was about something else? Thanks, Sheila. That's very helpful. So, all right. So I think we should just kind of get going. When Jackie from BBC News Labs shows up, we'll get in and we'll get started. This is, we are, I know, supposed to be trying to do sort of more practical stuff and so on. I'm not sure how practical this will be, but this is to some extent a conceptual discussion about a different way we've been trying to push the field of journalism. So I guess just as a really kind of quick question, does somebody want to just say what they think structured journalism is? Someone, all the people that put their hands up just now that said they knew? It's a test. It was a test.
Bringing more data out of your content.
Bringing more, sorry?
Like getting more data out of your content.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way of putting it. So I sort of made this one up about 6 this morning. So it may or may not be accurate, may not even be written right. But basically, it's you take your daily journalism needs. You know, you do what you do. You write stories. You take it, and then you take those elements of what you've done, and you turn that into data. So it's not so much, you know, data journalism classically is getting data from the outside world and putting it in, although that's parts of that as well. But it's as much taking what you normally do and take that and turn those parts of what you've reported into data. And then I think critically, you reuse them in new stories, in new visualizations, and other forms. You can do that by hand, or you can do that by machine. You could do that over a whole host of different things. And that's sort of the idea, that you take this and you turn it around. So a couple of sort of classic examples. PolitiFact is structured because it's structured journalism from my point of view, because when they go out and they fact-check something, they don't just write free text around what they've fact-checked. They turn it into a database, and then they can turn that into a series of news stories. You can ask the question, how many times did Obama lie on something? And they've taken what they've done day by day over the past, you know, several years, and turned that into a different story. Homicide Watch is a very good example of that, too, because when they go out and they choose to report every death in every murder in D.C., they get particular pieces of information so that you can track every homicide, and you can follow the case through its progression. So it's very different from, if you like, regular daily journalism, where you go out and you report on the things that you think are newsworthy. In this case, they decided to report on everything. And then my favorite, I've connected China, where we build out databases of relationships, so you could see how people were connected in China and how power flowed through, by essentially taking a whole bunch of free text, structuring it into a database, using that database to drive a whole set of different visualizations. This is a relationship one. We had one on the power structure, and then we did one on essentially career track of people. So that's the gist of the idea. We wanted to talk a little bit about why we think, I guess, first of all, that it's not just a different sort of presentation of journalism, but it's an entirely different approach to journalism. So, David, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, my sort of 200,000 foot view of what structured journalism is in contrast to data journalism. So data journalism, if you look at data journalism as being reporting out of a database, you start with a database that came from the police department or wherever it came from, and you report out of that database. In contrast, structured journalism is reporting into a database. So you get your reporting from wherever you get it, and it goes into the database, and then the database is used to generate news products. And this is a, you know, it's not just another sort of innovation like the various flavors of the month that pop up in journalism innovation. It's a very sort of deep understand or a deep reevaluation or rethinking of what journalism is and what it could be. And it's a perspective that gets to the root problems that are basically destroying journalism right now, the unbundling of these distribution channels that everybody depended on until the internet came along. And that's why it's so exciting, by changing this perspective to reporting into a database and then using the database to drive the news products, then everything changes. You reset all the assumptions and the possibilities, and you're in a new world where you can do new things.
So one of the things we want to talk about, and mostly desperately waiting for Jackie to get here, more than anything else, so that we have somebody else to talk through this, is that there's a couple of essentially basic ideas behind what we're trying to do here. The first one, I think, is really that there's sort of an economic reason for why you would want to take the information that you reported on and put in a database. First of all, just wasteful. We write stories, and then we publish them, and after we publish them, we take a match and we light it and we burn it because we throw it away. We don't really throw away our notebooks, but we often very likely throw away our notebooks. We certainly don't share across the newsroom very well. So the first one is just economic. Let's save what we have. If we structure it properly, we can reuse it well. So there's essentially just an efficiency argument. But the real driver here is the notion that if we took that information and we harnessed it to either a data visualization engine or a machine language generating engine, what you can do then is you can create news on demand. You can create news that's personalized, that's on demand, that allows you to look at things. So if you look at Homicide Watch, for example, and there are problems with this approach, one of them being that we haven't actually proved economic value yet because Homicide Watch, in fact, stopped working because they ran out of business. But if you look at a story on Homicide Watch, you can, because of the nature of the way they've reported it out, when they look at a particular case, they've got stories about the progress of any particular case, but because they pull the data out, they can track how the case is going. They've got the age, they've got the gender, they've got the race, they've got the cause of death, they know who the detectives are. So rather than sort of write a story about what's an interesting murder in D.C., they've decided to cover every murder in D.C. And the result is that you're serving a different set of audiences, people who are very interested in whoever this is. His friends, his family, the people who are interested in the alleged perpetrators. It's a different reimagining of news and what you would do with it and how people can come to this and essentially get as up-to-date a story as possible because they fill in the database when the information comes in rather than when they feel like writing a story. The contrast to this was a fantastic series that the Washington Post did in 2012, I think, or 2013, where they looked at 11 years of homicide data. They did huge analysis of all of that, and they mapped out where homicide rates were higher in D.C. and so on. Great story, but it published a year and a half after they got the data. And so, you know, all the data in the story was already a year old by the time they had it. It's a great sort of long tail, deep analysis, but this really kind of changes the dynamic of what is the definition of this kind of news. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you've done with structured stories, and if I can call it up?
Okay, sure. Yeah, so when you start thinking about news as data, there's a question that you come to very, very quickly, which is, what are the atoms of news? What are these kind of fundamental units of news? If you were to break it all down into the smallest particles possible, what would those particles be? And that's still kind of uncertain at the moment. People are working on different approaches. In these examples that we've seen here, Connected China and PolitiFact and Homicide Watch, the particles are are, for example, in Homicide Watch, little bits of text with purpose to the text, and also in PolitiFact, in Connected China, they're people and the relationships between people, and those are specific particles or atoms for a specific purpose in each case. What I'm trying to do with structured stories is to generalize structured journalism. In other words, to make it possible to take any news at all and structure that. And the paradigm that I'm using for this is computational narrative or an analytical approach to narrative and story founded on events. And so it's about structuring individual events and then combining those events in networks, basically, to create narratives. And this is very experimental. But there's other projects that are somewhat similar that are going on in various parts of the world. And this may provide a kind of a glimmer as to how structured journalism might be able to apply to any news at all. The view there, if you go to the told as, the structured story view is probably the most illustrative there. There you go. And so what structured stories is doing is these events are based on small templates that describe an abstract idea of the event. For example, a character hired another character, and that's something that happens all the time. The character who does the hiring is different. The character who is hired is different. The circumstances are different. But that abstract idea of a character hiring a character, that's something that happens all the time. And there's actually a formal definition of these scenarios. They're called semantic frames. And there's a formal database of definitions called FrameNet that I use to underlie all this. And then I combine that with knowledge graphs. You're probably familiar with Google Knowledge Graph because when you do a little search now, about a quarter of all searches throw up a structured knowledge graph entry. And that's an entry in a huge Google Graph database for that semantic concept. And there's other ones. There's Freebase and Wikidata and several others. So I combine these frame scenarios with those knowledge graph entries to structure the event. And then they're strung together in these networks that are stories. And this is, again, a little bit advanced. You can play with this. You can get on the site and play with it as you wish. But it kind of shows that it is possible at some level to structure general news. And there's a lot of implications behind that if it can be made to work, sort of in a real workflow with a real business model behind it. And there's some very exciting possibilities on the business model side.
You want to just talk about the experiments that you've done so far?
There's been three experiments on reporting into structured stories. One was conducted last summer in New York City, and this was in cooperation with the Duke Reporters Lab, which is run by Bill Adair, who is one of the founders of PolitiFact. And we had three reporters, student reporters from Duke University, report into the database. And that was the first time real reporters in a real workflow had reported into this. We weren't sure that it was going to work at all in terms of like real workflow, but it did. We got about 60-something stories over about 2 months of reporting. And it was in terms of demonstrating that it was possible to do this, it was quite successful. Then I've done another set of reporting projects at the University of Missouri with students there, and the goal with that project is to try to figure out how to structure state government stories. So we've got a bit of a crisis in the U.S. at the moment, in that at the very same time that all the political power is kind of moving down to states and cities. We've got less and less reporting going on at states and cities because of the economic constraints. And so I'm kind of working with a team at the University of Missouri to try to figure out how to structure those stories to audit, partially automate and yet editorially control these stories in ways that can make sense in the financial realities that we're in. And then the third one was a smaller but kind of interesting project with a big newsroom in Southern California focused on car chases. And this was reported into Structured Stories, I think August, September, October kind of time frame. And that one's been interesting because, first of all, the car chases are very similar kind of stories, from story to story to story. They're very repeatable kind of stories. And what that's enabled me to do is to work with Automated Insights, who are the vendor that's kind of at the forefront of automated journalism and natural language generation, and turn those stories automatically into written text articles. And that's kind of exciting just because it's cool, but it's also exciting because if that technology can be moved into the state and local government realm, there is the possibility of having very readable, very natural text articles produced automatically for state and local government. So you get an idea here of kind of the power. If you can get this to work and find workflows that it works within, there's some pretty pretty structurally different things that you can do.
So what David has done is sort of is incredibly huge and ambitious project that builds out essentially a CMS that's trying to be able to structure essentially almost any sentence and any event. And to be able to structure it into a sentence. This actually shows sort of a continuum of how people are looking at this. So PolitiFact, for example, if you actually look at a PolitiFact story, much of it is in fact free text. But it's done when Matt Waite and Bill Adair and so on started up this project, they essentially built a CMS that added extra fields. I guess that would be the simplest way of doing it. And one large field was what would have been in a story context, the story. Is this claim true or false? But then they added many other fields, right? Who said it, when they said it, what is topic about, what their judgment was, is it true, mostly true, lie, lie, pants on fire, and so on. And rather than do what ordinarily you would do with a newspaper CMS, which is you would have byline, dateline, date, story chunk, and then metadata the hell out of it if you did, which essentially just tag it. What they did was they took that and they broke it. And by changing the notion of how you tag a story, and instead either you can call it micro-tagging or you can call it sort of structuring it, which I prefer, structuring the database, they could then take that and rebuild into completely new fields. You could, rather than... If you do a search on, what does Hillary say about healthcare, in a normal newspaper database, you get a whole bunch of stories, and then you have to read them to understand whether they thought she lied or she didn't lie or she was telling the truth. Because they've structured it, they can create a page that essentially gives you a summary of all of that. Now, that's a very simple. You don't have to change workflow tremendously. You have to tell people to fill things out in different databases. Or in different fields of a database, but you don't really change people's work. So this is probably the least intrusive workflow. In the case of Homicide Watch, which is really Laura and Chris Amico when it first started, it was Laura full-time and Chris part-time, so it was 1.5 people covering every murder in D.C., which luckily they're not that many. It was more intrusive, was easier to do because it was their startup, they could decide what they were doing. But they added some additional workflow, right? First of all, they made a decision to cover every murder, not to decide whether it was newsworthy or not newsworthy. They would cover every one. And then in building the database, they chose to collect information that you might not have collected if you were just writing stories. They chose to collect information about the detective and so on. And so then they built that into a database. By doing that, they were able to, again, they could do very quick analysis on, how many blacks are killed, what the age groups are, location, all that sort of stuff, which ordinarily you would have had to go out and FOIA from your police department if your police department wasn't releasing that regularly. And in fact, they would have more information that the police department would release. They also made then a secondary decision that they would follow through every element of every case. So again, that imposes a different kind of workflow, and it's not like you can go to the Washington Post, police beat reporters and say, by the way, from now on, I expect you to show up at every hearing for every murder. It's a mental shift. So again, this takes it one further step. And then in Connected China, which cost too much and took too long and all of that kind of stuff, we got, essentially 18 people to just sit and research the hell out of this. We didn't touch the China newsroom at all. They probably have had a revolt if we asked them to do it. and collect very specific types of information. And in fact, we wound up having to do things like, come up with things like mentor to, reportedly close to. So we created entirely new fields that you would not have done if you were writing a story, or maybe every now and then you would write it in a story, but we wanted it for essentially everybody in a position of power in China. And so that imposes yet another cultural hurdle on the team. So each of these is sort of, if you can see, sort of incrementally more difficult a step to get a newsroom to do. And then, of course, David's project is probably the most difficult in the sense that you're asking people to completely rethink how they write their sentences. And maybe you should talk a little bit about how difficult it is as well as how people come to it.
Sure. One of the Duke students who was reporting on the New York project described it as learning to write again. And that's kind of what it is. Another sort of way of looking at this is the ethnographer Chris Anderson, C.W. Anderson, who I think a lot of you might know. He observed the project last summer, and his view on it is that it is the application of what he calls computational thinking to journalism. So it's not just a small sort of change in what you do that's required. It really is a perspective shift. In fact, Structured Stories is really not a technical project. I mean, there's technology at the root of it and knowledge representation and so on, but primarily it's a project that's about a shift in perspective from basically a text-focused way of looking at things to this computational thinking way of looking at things. And that's the challenge that people have. So. And welcome, Jackie. Now we can start. So.
Come up, sit down, settle down. We're just talking. We're just stalling till you got here. So obviously there are other projects, and one of the things I am going to talk a little bit about is just essentially why some of these projects have died, have not taken off. And a lot of that comes around cultural change and all the difficulties around that. But I thought maybe we'd take a couple of minutes to talk about where projects that you think are moving ahead. Yet another project that unfortunately died was Circa, which was another very interesting way of taking information, atomizing it, breaking it up so that you would get different versions of stories based on how much information you had already absorbed. And in fact, if you want to mention the quartz spot.
Yeah, Circa was a great experiment. I mean, that's kind of one of the realities of such a sort of different view of what journalism is that you're going to have a lot of trial and error. I mean, you look at the early web and the early stage of any technology, there's a lot of trial and a lot of error. But Circa was a really pioneering effort. But you look at the Quartz chat interface that was released about a month ago, and some of you might not be familiar with this, but what it is it's a way of interfacing with news through chat. So you basically go to you download the app, it's a chat app, and it basically prompts you to work through a series of stories and a series of paths within a story based on a chat interface. And this is really cool, and chat interfaces are going to become more and more kind of a feature of how we interact with things. Well, that's great as a bot, as a chat bot, and all of the buzz about the innovation behind it is as a chat bot. But what's really happening there from the structured journalism perspective is that behind the scenes of that chatbot, they have structured their journalism. They have organized it in a way that kind of breaks it down into little bits. And what that lets them do is it lets them put this new interface on it, in this case a chatbot. But if they wanted to use a Circa-type interface or any other interface or some new interface that comes along or a Vox-type interface or slideshows or anything else, they can do that because the journalism is held as data at some level, and so it's decoupled from the interface. So you're kind of future-proofed on consumer-facing innovation if you have your news structured at some level. So I think that structured journalism is popping up all around us. I think there's examples of this everywhere, and we're not sort of identifying it as structured journalism because we're kind of hung up on the chatbot interface or whatnot. But I think this is going to, this is going to, the realization that this is based on an underlying set of structured data, and then exploring ways to sort of find commonality in how to, interchange between data sets and so on, that's likely the way it will go. I mean, Jackie's team at the BBC is doing dramatically exciting work on breaking this stuff down into stories and events also. And they have a whole pipeline of user interface products that are based on that, which I'm keen to hear about. So. Let me pass that over to Jackie.
All right, let me try and pull this plug in. Just okay.
Talk. Hi, everyone. First of all, apologies for my tardiness. I had some trouble getting a taxi. They don't like UK bank cards, it seems, with Uber anymore. And if we could do...
I don't even know if this thing's up yet. It's hunting.
Hunting?
It's hunting.
So if you'll bear with me, I could talk about some of the things that we're doing. That's not going to
move. It's not good.
Okay. Let's switch back to this computer, and yeah. I can just bring up examples, okay?
You keep talking, and I will pull a
cooler. Don't worry about it. I can keep talking for my notes.
Okay.
Okay.
No, give me that. I'll take it off as a... Is it a PowerPoint? No.
No, just go back to all this. Right, it's okay. You can bring up examples. Okay. So one of the big problems when you start talking about structured journalism is how do you get structured data out of the existing journalistic processes that are going on, right, without creating a lot of extra work. So one project that we're currently working on came out of something, if I can bring it up on your computer, something that I noticed the BBC did a lot on its website. So, basically, I noticed that we were giving a lot of coverage, of course, to the EU referendum, and one of the ways that we're covering it is in a Q&A, so, which I have all set up on my Mac, which won't work, it seems. But if I go over to here, oh my gosh, sorry, I'm not used to a Windows computer.
Okay.
So let's try BBC. All right, so this is what I noticed. We have this evergreen, ever-updating Q&A on the EU referendum. And I noticed that we did lots of these sort of explainer pieces, right? And it has a lot of good content. So if you're someone who's, like, searching, like, Googling, like, what is... Maybe you're Googling what is the European Union. I don't know if anyone has ever like seen that map or various diagrams trying to explain what is Europe versus the European Union and so on and so forth. What if there was a way for us to take this content that we're already producing and get a structure out of it without actually changing the process at all for our journalists? My colleague Paul and I got to thinking. This is, coming out of our main CMS. It's using a template. It's using a template that is in particular for these explainers. If you view source, how do you view source? Sorry, I'm also not a Windows user, so this is interesting. Basically, what I did was I started wondering how exactly could we like structure it, and I started thinking about how Google's knowledge graph works, right? And sometimes, if you Google a question, it'll have an answer at the top. So I started reading up on how the knowledge graph works, and it turns out that it uses markup in either inline markup or JSON LD markup from schema.org. I don't know if you guys are familiar with schema.org, but we started looking at schema.org. When I viewed source on our news stories, I noticed we already had schema.org markup in it. So the question was, does schema.org allow you to model questions and answers? And it turns out that yes, they do. If I could just get that loaded up. We realized that with just a little bit of extra markup, we could actually... We could actually just change the template that's in the CMS and not actually create any extra work aside from that one time hit of finding the template and updating it. I'm scrolling down so I could show you some examples of what this would look like. So here's like a regular HTML, right? Now, if you want to just add markup to it, for us, with the EU referendum example, for instance, it would just be adding an extra div, adding a couple of properties on that div, saying it's a question, adding a property on the paragraph where the answer is. And then we could also tie it into our linked data platform and say this question is about the EU referendum, and we have a URI for that. We could say that it mentions, maybe it mentions David Cameron, so on and so forth. So that's one of the projects that we're working on right now. It has a lot of, it opens up a lot of possibilities. First, it's good for SEO, of course, right? Because Google will be spidering our site and finding this extra markup. Two, if Google treats us, the BBC, as a trusted source, and someone searches for something like, let's see what one of these questions are. A better question than that, maybe. What does Brexit mean? We can then maybe show up at the top of the search. And then it's sort of an SEO thing, but it's also in the spirit of public service, right? We're getting answers to people want to them quickly. It also means, though, that we can crawl our own site and pull out all of that structured data. And then we could do things like build tools, maybe we're looking at building a tool for our journalists that can integrate with our CMS so that if they're writing a story that they're tagging with things that some of our questions and answers have been tagged with, they can like pull in some of the questions we've already answered and repurpose them that way.
Cool. You want to show anything else?
Sure.
Go for it. At some point, we'll go to questions. But
okay. No, that's what we're in the live page right now. No, it's not in production yet. We're working on that now. I really wish I could get this on.
Sorry.
Yeah. Let's see. If we go to slides.com. One second. Again, thank you for bearing with me. I could show you some other examples.
It's a miracle of the internet.
Yeah, typing live in front of an audience is really
great. Always good. Good to be on the fly. There you go.
Okay. So I'm going to skip ahead because this is not the...
Different presentation.
This is a different presentation. I have one for us. But first, I just wanted to point out this picture because this actually happened live on TV on the 6 o'clock news, and I just thought it was really great. So...
I'm sure that wasn't the audience for the 6 o'clock show.
So, okay. Moving right along. So I could talk about how like the BBC has a long history of tagging, but... We're beyond that now. is great. So I think you were talking about chat apps and chatbots before. We at the BBC have mostly in the World Service been working on a variety of chat platforms. One of them you might have heard about was on WhatsApp. We did an Ebola service for West Africa. A new thing that we're working on now is it's related to structured data, but it's also circumventing censorship. We realized that the top application downloaded in lots of former Soviet countries is this thing called Telegram. That is Uzbek that I Google translated. So if anyone in the room speaks Uzbek and spots an error, apologies. But we realized that from the very basic pieces of structured data that we already have, our RSS feeds, we could automate a chatbot and get access, give access to audiences that don't have any access to our content. With further structured data, though, if we have the structured data for our Q&As, for instance, we can then scale that out to the variety of different chat platforms, each with their own APIs, right? It takes a lot of work. I've been learning to build bots for each of these services and then to have to hunt down or create the content for each of them separately, we would never get done. So just having the ability of our Q&As, our glossaries, to then distribute our content, structured data makes that a lot easier.
So just, to, I guess one of the things I just wanted to mention is that, you know, these are all great projects. They're all working sort of at very different levels of you know, how structured you want to be and how much repurposing. But I think one of the critical things is as we move into a multi-platform world, you know, you can't really write stories for every platform. It doesn't scale. And so when you start trying to structure your reporting to begin with, then you've got the ability to recreate different types of content for different types of places. As I said earlier on, one of the things we do believe that, you know, sits behind this and why it's a good idea is fundamentally that it is that there's a good economic reason. I mean, there's a good public service reason. You present stories to people in a way that they want, that's more useful to them. Homicide Watch, unfortunately, it has franchised out, I guess, to a lot of places. The original one is no longer live, which is a problem. Connected China, we don't update really anymore. You know, arguably, this would be a reason why you'd say, well, this is not a very good idea because things are dying on us. To which I would say, you know, things die all over the place. These are great experiments. We're moving along. One of the reasons I think that, I think there are multiple reasons why things are not moving as fast as, frankly, we'd like. One is, frankly, cultural resistance and cultural change within newsrooms. It's hard to get people to do things differently. Nobody really feels like they should come into work to help fill a database, you know, beyond winning the Pulitzer Prize. Technology can be challenging. Newsroom CMSs are not built for these, so you often have to rebuild a new CMS, and if you're rebuilding a new CMS, then you run straight into your tech department, which is always another challenge. And then, frankly, users, I think, are not necessarily ready for some of these changes as well, and that, you know, as long as things fall into a mold of what people are used to, a chatbot is, you know, on the edge, but it's close to what people are used to because it feels like interacting with a human being, we can move that along, but it's going to be a slow, regular process.
I was talking to a colleague of mine about this very, well, one of the issues that you mentioned, which is the cultural change. Several years ago, the BBC, in collaboration with the Guardian Press Association, I'm probably omitting one or two other organizations there, got together and came up with this storyline ontology and presented it to the newsroom. And what they presented was this really, really complicated chart And it had like, this is a storyline, and storyline has all these events and like their involvements, and it was like this really, it was huge. And the response from the newsroom was basically like, what, like why would we want to do that? So when I was talking to one of the people, the core people involved in that project, he said any kind of change in reporting approaches at all has to have support from the newsroom. So what we've been focusing on my team in the labs is showing the newsroom what are some of the things that are possible if you change the way you do your reporting at all. This is an example of trying to create a more compelling, interactive overview of the Arab Spring. So this is using structured data. It's a reusable template. It's pulling out the key locations in the narrative of the Arab Spring. It's pulling out quotes and attributing them to people.
You have information there that's not correct. Who is easy to find himself on fire? Yeah, now you have it.
Okay, this is a prototype. Okay, the content. This is a prototype that we threw together. There might be factual errors. I'm sorry about that. If the idea was to show like what the interface could actually look like. Wow, you know, I've presented this many times and no one has pointed that out. Thank you. But basically, it lets the audience actually like get a geographical view of what's going on and who the people and key events are involved.
A quick question on that is the data that is behind that, is that the schema.org data that's driving the chat interfaces for WhatsApp or something similar to it?
It's actually it's similar. Yeah, it's JSON data that we're actually pulling out of our a staging version of one of our new CMSs that we were allowed to put texts that might have errors in it. So if you look at the there's a JSON file that powers this. So we quickly tried to put together another one. Let's see if that's the right thing.
Because you know that's quite a powerful example of. You know, one set of data driving two completely different interfaces, a chat interface and something like that, which is spectacular.
Exactly, right. And again, this was just like for prototype's sake. This was not supposed to be a complete overview of the whole story of Edward Snowden. But basically, like, we were just trying to show that we can use this same template. We could apply different CSS styles to it, so it doesn't always have to have a black background, let's say, all we had to do was have that JSON format, and we could build this.
So, conscious of time, I just wanted to know if there were any questions from anybody. Yeah. Is there a mic up? I think there's a mic up. If you can go up and use the mic, that would be great.
Hello. I find this all very exciting. I have a two-part question. We all are in newsrooms or have recently been in newsrooms that have content management systems that are just troves of unstructured text. Do you see any sort of low-hanging fruit for getting or extracting data that could have value for either journalism purposes or for the audiences? And second part of the question is, if you wanted to go about, I guess, parsing these sort of events out of those unstructured texts, like what would you need to do or how would you get started, basically?
Go for it.
So,
I had a lot of interns.
So there's two things there. So the stuff that I work with, the data is structured by a person, and there's already in SEO and most large media organizations quite a lot of use of named entity recognition where you extract entities and use those for various things. A lot of you know, that's basically what Google Knowledge Graph is doing for Google Search. About a quarter of Google searches are basically named entity recognition from a search query. And so there are a set of efforts in academia at the moment to do what you suggested, which is to parse through large amounts of text, and corpus of text, and pull out quite detailed structure. And this is not just named entities, but also the events and the assignment of entities, you know, characters, people, so on, to roles within the events. So who did the hiring? Who was hired? That kind of stuff. That's pretty early days right now, but that's something that I think all journalists should keep a very, very close eye on, because I think in structured journalism, there's a continuum between a way that this works that's driven and owned by newsrooms, but there's another sort of darker possibility where some big tech company, you know, puts a machine on the web that sucks all the information out of it and turns it into structured data and makes, you know, really sexy news products. And that's not a good thing. I don't think it's going to work. I think there's technical barriers and systemic barriers behind that will prevent that. But it's definitely something that I think everybody who's interested in journalism and technology needs to keep a careful eye on. There's a, for those of you who are interested, it might be a bit academic, there's a workshop, an academic workshop on this in Austin in November. And if you're interested in that, come and see me afterwards.
I do think that it's very difficult to go back into the past to take a huge chunk of unstructured data and try and structure it well. And you know, those of us who have, you know, looked at sort of language processing and so on, I mean, you can do some of it, but I don't think you can do enough of it well. But I think there's a more fundamental challenge, although, as Jackie's pointed out, you can actually do a lot with what you already have. But part of it is really thinking through what's your final product going to look like. And if you don't start with Homicide Watch, if you don't start with the notion that I want to show every murder, then there's no point going back and just going to the Washington Post database of murders, because it's not complete, doesn't have all the information you want. You have to think about what your end product looks a bit like before you can start deciding what you want to structure, which means there's a lot of stuff wasted, but it is, like. Next question.
My question is about the difficulties of getting data. So for structured data project like Connected China, which is related to government and the hierarchies within a certain government, have you ever encountered any difficulties of getting data and information, and how did you deal with that?
So that one was actually very straightforward. It just took time and money. We made a decision that there would be nothing in it that was not publicly available information, which is sort of a little odd because, frankly, I like to think that there's a lot of secret sauce in this. But in this case, what we had 18 people for 18 months reading every goddamn thing we had on China and sourcing it, everything by line, right? And you would say the Wall Street Journal reported this, Reuters reported this. This is from a book of whatever. And you would just go through and just break it down into information. It was all brute force. There was nothing else to it. And we made a decision on that mostly because you wanted to have a certain level of transparency because it was a Chinese government and because it was a Chinese power structure, to be able to say, when you say that this person is a mentor of that person, where did you get it? Well, there's a footnote. And the footnote says the source. And you can disbelieve the source if you want, but it's all publicly available.
Hi, I have two related questions about standards. So, Jackie, in working with schema.org, were there times where you were kind of like, this doesn't cut it, they're like limiting things about using schema.org? And also, are there like emerging data standards that any of you find promising, or is it like a little early for that?
Sure, so we're using schema.org right now in a fairly limited fashion. Can I go back to the browser? So basically, like, the markup that you're allowed to put according to the standard on a question lets you say what it's about and what it mentions. We'd like it to get a little more specific than that. For some of the questions and answers, but then we run into, let's say it lets us get that specific. That's going to require some extra work on the reporter's end, right? Because right now what we can do is these articles are already tagged in the content management system. It's part of the existing process. So we haven't really run into big limitations with how schema.org works, because there's a tension between how much extra work that puts on the reporter side. As for emerging standards, I don't know if that's one you want to take.
And standards, I think the micro formats is one, and I think schema.org has events, it's about 200 events that are defined or so in schema.org. There's another set which is at this point more academic, and this is things like FrameNet. There's a new schema from a set of academics in the EU called Events and Situations Ontology. The Storyline Ontology is another one from the BBC. But these are still sort of very kind of preliminary. And then I know that the folks whose name or whose acronym escapes me right now, who do the News ML standards and the news codes and so on, they're looking at this. And I don't know exactly what that means. I just have heard this sort of secondhand and so on. But I think there's an awareness that there's a need for standards for structuring news.
I can just add on to that. Last month, we kicked off a new project called SUMMA. It's a 3-year EU-funded project that is a collaboration between the BBC, Deutsche Welle, several universities, and it's all about figuring out how to create structured data, multilingual, at scale. Connecting, pulling out events and how they're connected to how different people are connected to the events. We're doing it in 7 different languages. Arabic is one of them. And we're also, it's a pretty ambitious project. We're also trying to have some of the outcomes be automated summarization of articles. And doing that at different lengths, so for different platform distribution and such. So that just got started. But if you look it up, it's SUMMA, and I can put up a page.
That sounds cool. Thank you.
Hi. I'm going to be a downer and bring up distribution platforms and wonder how a structured story works with Facebook Instant Articles or Apple News, where those already have, they're sort of imposing a structure for you, and it's more about layout than data, but that layout is data as well. So I guess I'm wondering if you're talking with them or if there's any discussion or if there's any sense about the future of structuring stories across platforms and whether instant articles or
so
stories.
I think there's a perspective cross-wiring here, which is that, from my understanding, things like AMP and the Facebook Fast articles, whatever it's called, instant articles, these are about text articles. And one of the dangers, I think, of newsrooms kind of giving all their text articles over to Facebook and Google and Apple to distribute, one of the dangers is that if that's where consumers get their news, then if you're building these really cool structured journalism products back in the newsroom, you've lost your distribution opportunity, right? So I think there's a conflict there. I think the model for structured journalism, long term, is newsrooms produce structured databases, and there's a decoupling between the structured databases and the interfaces, and those interfaces that Jackie showed, the chat and the really cool timeline thing, those could be done by third parties. Those could be done by random people. The database is what the newsroom produces, that doesn't preclude writing articles. For example, the automated insights work that I'm doing now. I think it's possible to produce a lot of text articles from including long event driven stories from natural language generation. So it doesn't preclude that. You could use your structured journalism database to produce text articles, which you could upload to instant articles or face or AMP or whatever to distribute. So there's some tension there, I think, between the perspectives of what news is.
I think there's a bit of a continuum as well. I mean, so obviously, if you know simply building essentially a database of information that you can use to create articles doesn't preclude them from being built in a format that's compatible with instant articles. But I think there's two things to bear in mind. One is, as you build out that database and you build things like personalization, you build things like news on demand as opposed to news when we publish, the possibility of creating essentially personalized instant articles, personalized news distributed whichever way you want, increases dramatically at a fairly low cost. So there's an economic argument there as well as a personalization and public service value. The other thing I think is for those of us who worry a bit about the distribution, you know, the loss of the control of distribution, is that if you build a strong enough structured database and you build essentially the engagement around what you can do in a database or off the visualization of a database, you've actually built a potentially compelling competing product. You can't. Yeah. One of the great things about Connected China is that you can't scrape it, right? I mean, you can. But what can you do with it? With all the data, you can't instant article it. You can't. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff you can. Now, maybe that's a weakness, but I like to think that that's also a strength because you can actually pull people in and keep them in.
I like to think of that as rebundling news as a network. You know, all of journalism's problems, and I mean all of them, come from one thing, which is the dissolution of the bundles that used to be based on distribution. And the thing about structured journalism that makes it different is it's the one form of innovation here that rebundles news, and it does it as a network. And I think that's, like, at the heart of why this is interesting.
Okay. I think one last question, and then we'll have to get out of here.
Yeah, if we're out of time, that's fine. I guess I'm curious to hear, David, like, your vision for what kind of competition and differentiation looks like once all news organizations are doing this. I mean, like, to take even Jackie's example, there's some topics that... So are competing news organizations going to have their own competing databases of the same topic? And is there differentiation maybe in the different ways that they've structured or schematized that? Or do you see them centralizing on a shared database, which also might have some downsides and dangers?
That's a great question. And I mean, the obvious answer is who knows. But I think that the way to sort of see how this will likely play out in the far future is to look at what's happened with network effects to date in the digital world. And with network effects, there's a winner-take-all kind of dynamic that plays with network effects. And I don't know if that is good or bad for journalism. I mean, it would be great if all the world's, on the one side, if all the world's journalism was in one place. Like, for example, if I were interested in the notes from a school board meeting in Novosibirsk, Russia, and I could get that in English from one big data set, and everything else is reported, that would be awesome at one level. On the other hand, that's an awesome and frightening amount of control or power or room for all kinds of bad things to happen. So I don't know. I think standards are very important here, and I'd like to think that with good standards, everybody can be interoperable and still have their area of expertise. But I don't know.
And just real quick, because I know we're over time. I'm not a person who like rants about the semantic web or linked data in particular. But there is a power in the way linked data works, right? There are ways that you can have disparate data sets and refer like a property like called same as that says this is a different data set, but it's referring to the same person. So then another data set will have the same as kind of thing. And that's one way that...
And that's incidentally how I do it in structured stories. So I don't hold a knowledge graph of all the stuff that I use. I just have a bunch of same as references. Sure. So other people can hold those.
So I would just sort of add one other point to that too, which is that I do think from a, you know, so I have to deal with sort of how we make money too. So one of the things I do think is that even as we share information and so on, newsrooms need to have their own secret source. In the case of PolitiFact, it's their liar, liar, pants on fire rating. So if you can keep something, that gives you a differentiation. If you share everything, then frankly, somebody else creates exactly the same news product that you have. So just before we finish, I want to say a couple of things. These are links, which you obviously can't click on, but we'll send this around. So we do. There is a Duke Reporters Lab does keep a list of structured journalism sites, and they keep it up to date. There is a whole bunch, thanks to David, of links to articles about structured journalism. My blog's in there, so you can go read that. I could use the traffic. Thank you. And that's how you contact us. We didn't put your email in, Jackie, because we didn't ask you if we could.
Oh, okay.
But
always on Twitter. So.
All right. Anyway, and
we were going to get to it. I know there's several of you that are really kind of hardcore interested in structured journalism. We were going to get together tonight
at some point.
So if you're interested in getting together for some beers to talk about structured journalism, ping me on Twitter or email, and we can figure something out.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.